These are spirits who have chosen the evil, have put aside promptings and influences of good, and have banded themselves under the leadership of intelligence still more evil to malign us and to hamper our work. Such are powerful for mischief, and their activity shows itself in evil passions, in imitating our work, and so gaining influence over the deluded, and most of all, in presenting to inquiring souls that which is mean and base, where we would tenderly lead to the noble and refined. They are the foes of God and man, enemies of goodness, ministers of evil. Against them we wage perpetual war. S.M., it is very startling to hear of such a powerful organization of evil. There are some, you know, who deny the existence of evil altogether, and teach that all is good though disguised. Alas! Alas! Most sad is the abandonment of good and choice of evil. You wonder that so many evil spirits obstruct. Friend, it is even so, and it is not astonishing. As the soul lives in the earth life, so does it go to spirit life. Its tastes, its predilections, its habits, its antipathies, they are with it still. It is not changed save in the accident of being freed from the body. The soul that on earth has been low in taste and impure in habit does not change its nature by passing from the earth sphere, any more than the soul that has been truthful, pure, and progressive becomes base and bad by death. Wonderful that you do not recognize this truth. You would not fancy a pure and upright soul degenerating after it has passed from your gaze. Yet you fable a purification of that which has become by habit impure and unholy, hating God and goodness, and choosing sensuality and sin. The one is no more possible than the other. The soul's character has been a daily, hourly growth. It has not been an overlaying of the soul with that which can be thrown off. Rather it has been a weaving into the nature of the spirit that which becomes part of itself, identified with its nature, inseparable from its character. It is no more possible that that character should be undone, save by the slow process of obliteration, than that the woven fabric should rudely cut and the threads remain intact. Nay more. The soul has cultivated habits that have become so ingrained as to be essential parts of its individuality. The spirit that has yielded to the lusts of a sensual body becomes in the end their slave. It would not be happy in the midst of purity and refinement. It would sigh for its old haunts and habits. They are of its essence. So you see that the legions of the adversaries are simply the masses of unprogressed, undeveloped spirits, who have banded together from affinity against all that is pure and good. They can only progress by penitence, through the instruction of higher intelligences, and by gradual and laborious undoing of sin and sinful habit. There are many such, and they are the adversaries. The idea that there is no such thing as evil, no antagonism to good, no banded company of adversaries who resist progress and truth, and fight against dissemination of what advantages humanity, is an open device of the evil ones for your bewilderment. S.M., have they a chief a devil? Section I. Chiefs many who govern, but not such a devil as theologians have feigned. Spirits, good and bad alike, are subject to the rule of commanding intelligences. Section 2. The answers given in this section are from the same source. The conversation commenced by some questions as to what the life of spirit showed to be most serviceable work in training school of life here. Much was made of the heart as well as of the head, and the orderly development of the whole powers of body, and intellect, and affection was insisted on. It was said that want of balance was a great cause of retrogression, or of inability, at any rate, to progress. I suggested the philanthropist as the man who came nearest to the ideal. The reply was smile. The true philanthropist, the man who has the benefit and progress of his fellows most at heart, is the true man, the true child of the Almighty Father, who is the great philanthropist. The true philanthropist is he who grows likest God every hour. He is enlarging by constant exercise the sympathies which are eternal and undying, and in the perpetual exercise of which man finds increasing happiness. the philanthropist and the philosopher, the man who loves mankind, and the man who loves knowledge for its own sake, these are God's jewels of priceless value, and of boundless promise. The one, fettered by no restrictions of race or place, of creed or name, embraces in his loving heart the whole brotherhood of humanity. He loves them as friends, as brethren. He asks not what are their opinions, he only sees their wants, and in ministering to them progressive knowledge he is blessed. This is the true philanthropist, though frequently the counterfeit, who loves those who think with him, and will help those who fawn on him, and give alms, so the generous deed be well known, robs the fair name of philanthropy of that all-embracing beneficence which is the true mark. The other, the philosopher, hampered by no theories of what ought to be, and what therefore must be, bound by no subservience to sectarian opinion, to the dogmas of a special school, free from prejudice, receptive of truth, whatever that truth may be, so it be proven, he seeks into the mysteries of divine wisdom, and, searching, finds his happiness. He need have no fear of exhausting the treasures, they are without end. His joy throughout life shall be to gather ever richer stores of knowledge, truer ideas of God. The union of those two, the philanthropist and the philosopher, makes the perfect man. Those who unite the two progress further than spirits who progress alone. S.M., his life, you say. Is it eternal? Yes, we have every reason to believe so. Life is of two stages, progressive and contemplative. We, who are still progressive, and who hope to progress for countless myriads of ages, as you say, after the farthest point to which your finite mind can reach, we know naught of the life contemplation. But we believe that far, far in the vast hereafter there will be a period at which progressive souls will eventually arrive, when progress has brought them to the very dwelling place of the Omnipotent, and that they will lay aside their former state, and bask in the full light of deity, in contemplation of all the secrets of the universe. Of this we cannot tell you. It is too high. Soar not to such vast heights. Life is unending, as you count it, but you are concerned with the approach to its threshold, not with the inner temple. S.M., of course. Do you know more of God than you did on earth? We know more of the operations of his love, more of the operations of that beneficent power which controls and guides the worlds. We know of him, but we know him not, nor shall know, as you would seek to know, until we enter on the life of contemplation. He is known to us only by his act. Section 2. In further conversation I alluded again to the conflict between good and evil, and a long answer to my question, or, rather, to what was in my mind, was written. The storm was spoken of as one that would rage, with intervals of lull, till some 10 or 12 years had passed, when a period of repose would ensue. This is almost the only case I have noted in which a prophecy was ventured upon. Though the ideas in the message have since been conveyed repeatedly, and with more precision and power, I leave it untouched to show the character of the teaching at the time. What you hear are the first mutterings of a conflict which will be long and arduous. Such are of periodical occurrence. If you could read the story of the world with the spirit sight, you would see that there have always been periodic battles between the evil and the good. There have recurred seasons when undeveloped intelligences have had predominance. Especially are such seasons consequent on great wars among you. Many spirits are prematurely withdrawn from the body. They then pass before they are fit, and at the moment of departure they are in evil state, angry, bloodthirsty, filled with evil passion. They do mischief great and long in the afterlife. Nothing is more dangerous than for souls to be rudely severed from their bodily habitation, and to be launched into spirit life, with angry passions stirred, and revengeful feelings dominant. It is bad that any should be dismissed from earth life suddenly, and before the bond is naturally severed. It is for this reason that all destruction of bodily flesh is foolish and rude, as betokening a barbarous ignorance of the conditions of life and progress hereafter, foolish, as releasing an undeveloped angry spirit from its trammels, and enduing it with extended capacity for mischief. You are blind and ignorant in your dealings with those who have offended against your laws and the regulations, moral and restrictive, by which you govern intercourse amongst yourselves. You find a low and debased intelligence offending against morality, or against constituted law. Straightway you take the readiest means of aggravating his capacity for mischief. Instead of separating such one from evil influence, removing him from association with sin, and isolating him under the educating influence of true purity and spirituality, where the more refined intelligences may gradually operate and counteract the baleful power of evil and evil manifestations, you place him in the midst of evil associations, in company with offenders like himself, where the very atmosphere is heavy with evil, where the hordes of the undeveloped and unprogressed spirits most do congregate, and where, both from human associates and spirit influence, the whole tendency is evil. Vain and short-sighted and ignorant folly. Into your dens of criminals we cannot enter. The missionary spirits pause and find their mission vain. The good angels weep to find an associated band of evil human and spiritual massed against them by man's ignorance and folly. What wonder that you have gathered from such experience the conviction that a tendency to open crime is seldom cured, seeing that you yourselves are the plainest accomplices of the spirits who gloat over the fall of the offender. How many an erring soul erring through ignorance, as frequently as through choice, has come forth from your jails hardened and attended by evil guides you know not, and can never know. But were you to pursue an enlightened plan with your offenders, you would find a perceptible gain, and confer blessing incalculable on the misguided and vicious. You should teach your criminals, you should punish them, as they will be punished here, by showing them how they hurt themselves by their sin, and how they retard their future progress. You should place. Section 2. Them where advanced and earnest spirits among you may lead them to unlearn their sin, and to drink in wisdom, where the bands of the blessed may aid their efforts, and the spirits of the higher spheres may shed on them their benign and elevating influence. But you hoard together your dangerous spirits. You shut them up, and confine them as those who are beyond hope. You punish them vindictively, cruelly, foolishly, and the man who has been the victim of your ignorant treatment pursues his coarse foolish, suicidal sin, until in the end you add to the list of your foolish deeds this last and worst of all, that you cut him off, debased, degraded, sensual, ignorant, mad with rage and hate, thirsting for vengeance on his fellows, you remove from him the great bar on his passions, and send him into spirit life to work out without hindrance the devilish suggestions of his inflamed passions. Blind. Blind. You know not what you do. You are your own worst enemies, the truest friends of those who fight against God, and us, and you. Ignorant no less than blind. For you spend vast trouble to aid your foes. You cut from a spirit its bodily life. You punish vengefully the erring. You falsely arrogate to yourselves the right law divine to shed human blood. You err, and know not that the spirits you so hurt shall in their turn avenge themselves upon you. You have yet to learn the earliest principles of that divine tenderness and pity which labors ever through us to rescue the debased spirit, to raise it from the depths of sin and passion, and to elevate it to purity and progress in goodness. You know naught of God when you do such deeds. You have framed for yourselves a God whose acts accord with your own instincts. You have fabled that he sits on high, careless of his creatures, and jealous only of his own power and honor. You have fabricated a monster who delights to harm, and kill, and torture, a God who rejoices in inflicting punishment bitter, unending, unmitigable. You have imagined such a God, and have put into his mouth words which he never knew, and laws which his loving heart would disown. God our God good, loving, tender, pitiful, delighting in punishing with cruel hand his ignorantly erring sons. Base fable. Base and foolish fancy, produced of man's cruel heart, of man's rude and undeveloped mind. There is no such God. There is none. He has no place with us, none, save in man's degraded mind. Great Father, reveal thyself to these blind wanderers, and teach them of thyself. Tell them that they dream bad dreams of thee, that they know thee not, nor can know till they unlearn their ignorant conceptions of thy nature and thy love. Yes, friend, your jails and your legalized murder, the whole tenor of your dealings with criminals, are based on error and ignorance. Your wars and your wholesale murderings are even more fearful. You settle your differences with your neighbors, who should be your friends, by raying against each other masses of spirits. We see not the body, we care only for the spirit temporarily clothed with those human atoms and those spirits you excite to full pitch of rage and fury, and so you launch them, rudely severed from their earth bodies, into spirit life. You inflame their passions, and give them full vent. Vengeful, debased, cruel, earthbound spirits throng around your earth sphere, and incite the debased who are still in the body to deeds of cruelty and lust and sin. And this for the satisfying of ambition, for a passing fancy, for an idle princely whim, for lack of something else to occupy a king. Section 2. Ah! Friend, you have much, very much to learn, and you will learn it by the sad and bitter experience of undoing hereafter that which you have now done. You must learn the golden lesson, that pity and love are truer wisdom than vengeance and vindictive punishment, that were the great God to deal with us as you deal with your fellows, and as you have falsely fabled that he will, you would be justly sent to your own imagined hell. You must know of God, and of us, and of yourselves, ere you can progress and do our work instead of our adversaries. Friend, when others seek from you as to the usefulness of our message, and the benefit which it can confer on those to whom the Father sends it, tell them that it is a gospel which will reveal a God of tenderness and pity and love, instead of a fabled creation of harshness, cruelty, and passion. Tell them that it will lead them to know of intelligences whose whole life is one of love and mercy and pity and helpful aid to man, combined with adoration of the Supreme. Tell them that it will lead man to see his own folly, to unlearn his fancied theories, to learn how to cultivate his intelligence that it may progress, to use his opportunities that they may profit him, to serve his fellow men, so that when they and he meet in the hereafter, they may not be able to reproach him that he has been, so far as he could, a clog and an injury to them. Tell them that such is our glorious mission, and if they sneer, as the ignorant will, and boast of their fancied knowledge, turn to the progressive souls who will receive the teaching of wisdom, speak to them the message of divine truth that shall regenerate and elevate the world, and for the blind ones, pray that when their eyes are opened, they may not despair at the sight which they shall see. Section 3. The intensity with which the above message was written out was something quite new to me. The hand traversed sheet after sheet of my book, tracing the most minute characters, always emphasizing the name of God with capitals, and paragraphing and keeping a margin, so that the writing struck the eye as a beautiful piece of calligraphy. The hand tingled, and the arm throbbed, and I was conscious of waves of force surging through me. When the message was done, I was prostrate with exhaustion, and suffered from a violent headache at the base of the brain. On the next day I asked the cause, and the following message was given, but much more quietly. Your headache was the result of the intensity of the power, and the rapidity with which it was withdrawn from you. We could not write on such a subject without displaying eagerness, for it is one of most vital concern to those to whom we are sent. We would fain impress on you the paramount importance of obeying ever those unalterable laws which God has laid down for you, and which you violate at your own peril. Wars are but the product of your lust for gain, your ambition, your angry, proud, vengeful passions. And what is the product? God's fair works destroyed and trampled underfoot, the lovely and peaceful results of man's industry destroyed, the holy ties of home and kindred severed, thousands of families plunged into distress, rivers of blood shed wantonly, souls unnumbered rent from their earth body to rush unprepared, uneducated, unpurified into the life of spirit. Bad, all bad. earthy. Evil sprung from earth, and resulting in misery. Till you know better than this, your race will progress but slowly, but you are perpetually sowing seeds which produces a crop of obstacles to our work. Much there is in social knowledge and in the conduct of state affairs that you must unlearn, much that is to be added to your knowledge. For instance, you legislate for the masses, but you deal only with the offender. Your legislation must be punitive, but it should be remedial too. Those whom you think insane you shut up fast lest they should injure others. A few years ago, and you tortured them, and filled your madhouses with many whose only crime it was to differ from the foolish notions of their fellows, or to be as many were, and are, whom you have thought mad recipients of undeveloped spirit influence. This you will one day know to your sorrow that to leave the beaten track is not always evidence of a wandering mind, and to be the vehicle of spirit teaching is not proof of a mind unhinged. From many the power of proclaiming their mission has been taken away, and it has been falsely said that we have filled the asylums, and driven our mediums to madness, because blind ignorant men have chosen to attribute insanity to all who have ventured to proclaim their connection with us and our teaching. They have decided, forsooth, that to be in communion with the world of spirit is evidence of madness. Therefore, all who claim to be are mad, and consequently must be shut up within the madhouse. And because by lying statements they have succeeded in affixing the stigma, and in incarcerating the medium, they further charge on us the sin they have invented of driving our mediums to madness. Were it not ignorance, it would be blasphemy. We have brought naught but blessing to our friends. We are to them the bearers of divine truth. If man has chosen to attract by his evil mind and evil life congenial spirits who aggravate his wickedness, on his head be the sin. They have but tended the crop which he has already sown. He was mad already, mad in neglect of his own spirit and body, mad in that he has driven far from him the holy influences. But we deal not with such. Far more mad indeed are those besotted drunkards whom you deem not mad. To spirit eye there is no more fearful sight than those dens of wickedness and impurity where the evil men gather to steep their senses in oblivion, to excite the lustful and sensual passions of their debased bodies, to consort with the degraded and the impure, and to offer themselves the ready prey of the basest and worst spirits who hover around and find their gratification in living over again their bodily lives. These are dens of basest, most hideous degradation, a blot of your civilization, a disgrace to your intelligence. S.M., what do you mean by living over again their base lives? These earthbound spirits retain much of their earthly passion and propensity. The cravings of the body are not extinct, though the power to gratify them is withdrawn. The drunkard retains his old thirst, but exaggerated, aggravated by the impossibility of slacking it. It burns within him, the unquenched desire, and urges him to frequent the haunts of his old vices, and to drive wretches like himself to further degradation. In them he lives again his old life, and drinks in satisfaction, grim and devilish, from the excesses which he causes them to commit. And so his vice perpetuates itself, and swells the crop of sin and sorrow. The besotted wretch, goaded on by agencies he cannot see, sinks deeper and deeper into the mire. His innocent wife and babe starve and weep in silent agony, and near them hovers, and over them broods, the guardian angel who has no power to reach the sodden wretch who mars their lives and breaks their hearts. This we shadow forth to you when we tell you that the earthbound spirit lives again its life of excess of those whom it is enabled to drive to ruin. The remedy is slow, for such vices perpetuate themselves. It can only be found in the moral and material elevation of the race, in the gradual growth of purer and truer knowledge, in advanced education, in its widest and truest sense. S.M., this would prevent obsession such as you picture? Yes, in the end, and nothing else will, so long as you keep up the supply at the rate you now do. S.M., do children pass at once to a higher sphere? Number the experience of the earth life cannot be so dispensed with. The absence of contamination ensures a rapid passage through the spheres of purification, but the absence of experience and knowledge requires to be remedied by training and education, by spirits whose special care it is to train these tender souls, and supply them that which they have missed. It is not again to be removed from earth life, save in one way that misuse of opportunities might have entailed greater loss and have more retarded progress. The soul that gains most is the soul that keeps ever before it the work that has been allotted to it, which has labored zealously for its own improvement and the benefit of its fellows, which has loved and served God, and has followed the guidance of its guardians. This is the soul which has least to unlearn, and which progresses rapidly. All vanity and selfishness in every form, all sluggishness and indolence, all self-indulgence mars progress. We say naught of open vice and sin, nor of obstinate refusal to learn and to be taught. Love and knowledge help on the soul. The child may have the one qualification, it cannot have the other save by education, which is frequently gained by its being attached to a medium, and living over the earth life again. But many a child spirit leaves the earth life pure and unsullied who would have been exposed to temptation and grievous trial, and so it gains in purity what it has lost in knowledge. The spirit who has fought and won is the nobler one. Purified by trial, it rises to the sphere set apart for the proven souls. Such experience is essential, and for the purpose of gaining it many spirits elect to return to earth, and, by attaching themselves to a medium, gain the special phase of experience which they need. To one it is the cultivation of the affections that is necessary, to another the experience of suffering and sorrow, to another mental culture, to another the curbing and restraining of the impulses of the spirit, evenness of balance. All who return, save those who, like ourselves, are charged with a mission, have an object to gain, and in being associated with us and with you they gain their progress. This is the one desire of spirit. More progress. More knowledge. More love. Till the dross is purged away, and the soul soars higher and yet higher towards the Supreme. SM, return to earth is not the only method of progression. Number nor even the usual one. We have with us many schools of instruction, and we do not employ a second time one that has proved a failure. Some further conversation having taken place respecting the home and occupation of spirit, I inquired, not getting much information that I could assimilate, whether the writer knew anything of states of being outside of his own, or rather above it, and whether he knew of states of being inferior to that of incarnation on this earth. In reply, it was affirmed that spirits had no power to take in so vast a prospect as the range of spiritual existence, and that their knowledge was barred by the gulf fixed between what were called spheres of probation, or sometimes of purgation, in which the soul was developed and perfected, and the spheres of contemplation into which it then passed, never, except in rare cases, to return. It was said: the passage from the highest of the seven spheres of probation, to the lowest of the seven spheres of contemplation, is a change analogous to what you know as death. We hear little beyond, though we know that the blessed ones who dwell there have power to help and guide us even as we watch over you. But we know nothing by experimental knowledge of their work, save that they are occupied with nearer views of the divine perfection, in closer contemplation of the causes of things, and in nearer adoration of the Supreme. We are far from that blissful state. We have our work yet to do, and in doing it we find our delight. It is necessary for you to remember that spirits speak according to their experience and knowledge. Some who are asked abstruse questions give replies according to the measure of their knowledge, and are in error. But do not, therefore, blame them. We believe that we state what is accurate when we say that your earth is the highest of seven spheres, that there are succeeding the earth life seven spheres of active work, and succeeding these, seven spheres of divine contemplation. But each sphere has many states. We have said something to you of the reasons why the voluntarily degraded souls sink until they pass the boundary beyond which restoration becomes hard. The perpetual choosing of evil and refusing of good breeds necessarily an aversion to that which is pure and good, and a craving for that which is debased. Spirits of this character have usually been incarnated in bodies where the animal passions had great sway. They began by yielding to animal desires, and ended by being slaves of the body.